All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is the rapid reaction to the Falcons' 17-6 preseason loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Atlanta Falcons for over a decade at FalcFans.com. You can find me on Twitter at FalcFans. And, of course, I'm the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today is the rapid reaction to last night's preseason loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Falcons now fall to 0-3. They lost the quote-unquote dress rehearsal game. And as far as dress rehearsals went, not necessarily the best for the Falcons, particularly their starters. We saw the offense move the ball successfully on their opening drive and then ground to a halt and then basically do pretty much nothing until the very end of the second quarter, if my recollection is correct, and really struggled against what was arguably the best defense in the league. Statistically, you look at DVOA, was the best defense in the league. The Falcons offense, starting offense, was able to produce 6 points against the Jaguars again on that first drive and that penultimate drive in the first half. You know, the Jaguars are pretty much at full strength with their defense. You know, basically of those 11 key guys that were that league-leading defense a year ago, 9 of those guys returned. A.J. Bouye was out of the game. They replaced their nickel cornerback with Aaron Coleman being swapped out for D.J. Hayden. But for the most part, it's the same defense. We saw that defense really shut down this Falcons offense that really didn't have Julio Jones, Devontae Freeman, and was, you know, for a large portion of the first half, was working with a backup center. That's something we'll touch upon a little bit later. As we have done the last couple of games, we're going to go position by position, giving you guys my initial observations at each position group, you know, which guys stood out, which guys didn't, what units I'm going to be paying attention to when I rewatch the game later today as you guys are listening to this on Sunday. And we'll come back and talk maybe a little bit more detailed about some of those standouts on Monday's episode. So without further ado, let's jump right into it. Not a great performance for Matt Ryan, but not necessarily his fault either. Pressure was constant, particularly on third downs. That's why the Falcons failed to convert any of their third downs. It was 0 for 5 in the first half of this game. Matt Ryan only completed 42% of his passes, was sacked 3 times. You also had issues with wide receivers not necessarily getting open. A couple of those times where Matt Ryan saw pressure and got sacked, where he would hit his back foot on that 5-step drop, the ball would not come out because whoever he was looking at as his initial read was not open. And basically then the pressure was able to sort of collapse the pocket and either flush him or sack him. And so, you know, without sitting here without the benefit of all 22, I can't necessarily say whether or not it was the Falcons wide receivers weren't good enough to get open and separate from the Jaguars coverage, or it was maybe due to some less than capable, maybe what you would call, or what I have called in the past, vanilla route combinations that sort of relied on the Falcons to win in man coverage and not necessarily having the wide receivers with sans Julio Jones to necessarily do that on a consistent basis. But, you know, without the benefit of all 22 to see that things, let's just assume for now that it was a combination of both of those factors. Matt Schaub came in the second half, played in the third quarter, was his usual efficient self. Fortunately, had the benefit of seeing far less pressure than Matt Ryan did going up against the Jaguars' second unit defense. Kurt Benkert had a decent rebound performance coming in the fourth quarter. Didn't necessarily light it up, missed a couple of throws, but it was nice to see some improvement off of last week's down game against the Chiefs. And we'll wait and see if he can sort of finish the preseason really strong next week against the Dolphins. At the running back position, my main issue was I didn't see enough of Ito Smith. He got into the mix with the starters in the first half, didn't really take any reps with the backups in the second half, and so ended his night with just 2 carries. You know, not to be necessarily Mr. Negativity here and pretend like, you know, sitting here on my couch or in my computer chair as it is, to be able to make better coaching decisions than the guys that get paid millions of dollars to do that in Atlanta and have done a pretty good job of doing that over the last 3 years. But I just don't get the point of why they didn't get Ito more involved in the second half. And we discussed this throughout the summer and talking about how it made sense for the Falcons to maximize Ito's reps, because going into the season, you assume if Freeman and Coleman are relatively healthy as they have been, you know, they'll get nicked up every now and then, but assuming that they'll be relatively healthy, you're really not going to have many opportunities to see what Ito can do on offense. He'll probably get a couple of carries, a few dozen here or there over the course of the season, but you're not going to see a whole lot of him. So then that puts you in a position going into the 2019 season, particularly in the offseason when you have to make a decision about Tevin Coleman, you're not going to necessarily have all the information available to you about if Ito Smith is poised to sort of step up and fill that role, because you just haven't limited, you've only given him limited opportunities so far this season. We saw him get quite a bit of a workload last week, but again, as it happened in the first game and now in this third game, only two carries on offense. To me, that's not enough. To me, if you wanted to see more of Crawford and Williams, give them all the reps next week against the Dolphins in that fourth and final preseason game. This week was a perfect opportunity for you to get Ito. Maybe I'm being a little butthurt because, you know, my summer of Ito predictions didn't come to fruition. Maybe the Falcons plan on, you know, feeding Ito 10 to 15 carries next week against the Dolphins. I felt like they could have done a little bit more to feed him this week, but that's my only issue. Other than that, not really a whole lot to glean from the running back position. I'll make some evaluations upon rewatch to sort of see who stood out, and, you know, not much. You know, Malik Williams had a couple of nice runs towards the end. Coleman had one good run early in the game, but for the most part, it looked like the Jaguars defensive line played like the Jaguars defensive line and basically put the clamps down on the Falcons run defense. At the fullback position, Ricky Ortiz got the start. When I was focusing in on him, it seemed like he blocked reasonably well. Jocelyn Fowler played in the second half. I thought when I was focusing on him, he blocked reasonably well as well. Nothing that necessarily really moved the needle in any direction, forward or backwards. We've talked about how it's probably Ortiz's job to lose based off of his performance so far this preseason. No reason to think that has changed after this game. And basically, it's either going to take a really poor performance next week against the Dolphins from Ortiz and or an injury from him next week that's going to really sort of change the direction of where this fullback battle is going to go. So crossing our fingers that he can basically maintain moving forward. We're going to talk a little bit more about the offense and who stood out, but I do want to plug the fact that Locked On Podcast Network is now Locked On College. This past week, we've launched a college channel for the Locked On Podcast Network. If you're a fan of Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, Florida, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Baylor, Penn State, Oregon, or BYU, you can find podcasts devoted to those schools right now on the Locked On Podcast Network. We're going to be adding more schools throughout the rest of this fall and year. And you can find those again on the Locked On Podcast Network, wherever podcasts can be found, your team every day. So let's talk about the wide receiver position. One of the things that we wanted to see was Calvin Ridley, you know, show out against this Jaguars secondary. Didn't necessarily do that due to some drops. He was officially tagged with two drops. I think there was a third catch on his first target that he should have caught. Technically was broken up by the defender, but to me that was a ball that he was in position to catch, and had he done a better job shielding the defender in traffic, should have caught the ball. It hit his hands, hit it off his chest. But he did a decent job separating, at least, you know, all the times he dropped the ball, he was open. Sanu had a nice couple of grabs and dropped a touchdown on what was a good hit by the Jaguars backup safety. Going again to sort of what we talked about earlier, Sanu isn't necessarily a guy that's particularly adept at beating man coverage against quality cornerbacks. So that's part of the reason why I'm sort of skeptical whether or not we should blame the play calling or anything, and simply the fact that, you know, Sanu is not necessarily a guy that's going to be a man beater. And that's one of the reasons why the Falcons offense struggled so much. And as I said, really was open on the opportunities where he did drop the ball. One of them came against the backups in the second half. But, you know, the point of me bringing that up is you want to see your offense according to your scheme up ways to create for your wide receivers when they're arguably overmatched by the coverage. Other than that, at the wide receiver position, I thought Russell Gage had a couple of nice grabs. Dontez Byrd had a big catch late in the game, showed off his speed. as well. At the tight end position, Saubert had a big gain as well on a 44-yard play. He showed some nice moves after the catch. Hooper had a drop early in the game on a screen pass. You know, the tight end position is sort of nothing ever really stands out other than sort of these broken plays by Saubert for the most part. Looking at the offensive line, as we talked about earlier, the Falcons starters were overwhelmed by the Jaguars pass rush, particularly on some of the third downs. One of the reasons why they struggled on third downs, because obviously in those instances on third down, you almost always know it's going to be a pass unless it's third and one. Pretty much any other third down situation is overwhelmingly a passing down. You can argue whether or not third and twos and third and threes should be passing down based off of certain data, but I digress. But basically, in those situations, the Jaguars are able to pin their ears back, and the Falcons' offensive line understandably got a little bit overwhelmed, and those Jaguars were very effective at pressuring and getting after Matt Ryan early in the game. Not to make this into an overly dramatic or judgmental thing in sort of like saying, oh, this means the Falcons offensive line is going to struggle, but it only stands out in my mind with the Falcons struggles against this Jaguars defensive line because it's been emblematic of something that has plagued the Falcons throughout you know, the last decade or so, is that generally speaking, when they lose games, it's because other teams own them in the line of scrimmage and win in the trenches. And, you know, this has been a problem for the Falcons, and to me, this is why I put so much emphasis on the fact that, you know, for me, that the things that sort of are going to determine the outcome of the Falcons season this year is going to be Sark, due to the fact that when we face good defensive lines like this Jaguars line, and there you can make the argument that maybe there aren't defensive lines as good as this in the NFC, but they're very close to this in the NFC with teams like Minnesota and the Rams and Philadelphia, that there's going to be teams that can be able to pressure with four guys. And when you can pressure with four and drop seven, and, you know, even with a healthy Julio Jones, we've seen in the past where teams like Minnesota, teams like Philadelphia, and even the Rams to a lesser extent last year can give the Falcons a lot of problems. This is why Carolina for several years, you know, during the height of those Josh Norman years from like 2012 to 2014 were so problematic for the Falcons in a lot of ways. And so, again, not to necessarily be like, this is why the Falcons are going to struggle during the regular season. Take that out of it. I'm not necessarily extrapolating this to the regular season, but I'm just pointing this out because this is one of the reasons why I harp on these things constantly, is you need your offensive coordinator to be able to figure out ways to scheme around this, because we've seen time and time again that against elite defensive lines, despite how good our offensive line, whether you think it's in a top five unit or a top 10 unit, doesn't necessarily fare well against these units. And, you know, this has been a key to beating the Falcons for a number of years. So, again, it's not a strictly 2018 Sark thing. But flipping the other coin, and the other thing that I constantly harp about is that when you can create pressure with four, you can stop or slow down any offense, as the Jaguars have indicated and shown us. And that's why so much of my focus on the defensive side of the ball is about the Falcons pass rush and how that's going to determine a lot. If they can be able to create consistent pressure with four, then good things are going to happen for this Falcons defense and ultimately for this team. And it's the same thing on the offense. If they can sort of find ways to overcome these times when their offensive line is clearly overmatched and still figure out ways to convert on third downs and to at least, you know, move the ball in first and second down to avoid these situations on third downs when teams were able to pin their ears back, that's going to be successful. Again, not harping on this because I think, oh, this is a sign that the Falcons are going to struggle in 2018, but it's just a good opportunity to, again, stress that looking into the context of this game, you see those issues flare up, and it, just because it's a preseason doesn't mean it doesn't apply to future games, but not necessarily directly in the way that people will apply. That's sort of, I know that's confusing, but let's get back to the individual performances. It was interesting to see the Falcons utilize Wes Schweitzer at the center position. He subbed in for Alex Mack. I think Alex Mack got pulled maybe after the first quarter. And then you saw Schweitzer play into the second and third quarter as the team's backup center, presumably to give him an opportunity to see if he could unseat Ben Garland as the team's utility backup on the interior offensive line. As you guys well know, teams typically only activate 7 offensive linemen on game day, the 5 starters and 2 backups. The one backup is the guy that's going to play needs to be able to play all 3 interior positions in case you have an injury there. And the other backup is that swing tackle that's going to be able to need to be able to play both tackle positions. And that's basically Ben Garland, because he has that versatility to play center. I think the Falcons were kicking the tires on Schweitzer to see if he could do that job. Otherwise, he'll be probably inactive throughout the season, presumably because Fusco is going to probably move forward as a starter at that right guard position. I don't think Fusco had a great game for obvious reasons, as we've discussed. I don't think Schweitzer had a particularly great game. Obviously, getting your first real in-game reps against the Jaguars defensive line is probably not going to put you in the best situation, but I don't necessarily look at it and think Garland has to be too worried about losing his job in his absence. I think Sam Brailo is probably going to win that swing tackle job. I thought when I was focused on him, he seemed to do a decent job against that Jaguars defensive line, backup defensive line. Matt Gano had his struggles, particularly when he was facing guys like Dante Fowler. And I've seen other people sort of suggest that Sam Brailo or whoever is in danger of losing that swing tackle position against Gano. I've sort of been always of the mindset that that wasn't really a realistic option for the Falcons. Gano has an impressive skill set, i.e. he has a very impressive upside, but in terms of his readiness to be that sort of first man up in the event of an injury to either Jake Matthews or Ryan Schrader, I don't think he's anywhere close to being ready. He's still very raw. He's still very up and down. Again, you see the flashes. You see the potential that if you can give him a year or two of sort of developing and refining his technique and all those sorts of things, you could see a guy that could be a starter, if not a high-quality backup at the very least. But going back to the notion of sort of having depth on the offensive line, going back to 1996, there's only been 3 times in 22 seasons now where the Falcons have had an offensive line, the same starting 5 start every game. That was in 1998, 2010, and 2016. Not a coincidence. Those are arguably the 3 best seasons the Falcons have had in that 22-year history. And in 2012, they had 2 starting different lineups as well. So clearly there is a strong correlation between team success, certainly with the Falcons, and stability on the offensive line. But the point I bring that up to you is basically when you do the math on that, that means there's an 86% chance that at least one of their backup offensive linemen is going to start at least 1 game this year. And you look at the other 19 seasons where the Falcons have had multiple different starting lineups, on average, there have been 4 different starting lineups in there. So that also assumes that there's going to be more than likely multiple injuries over the course of the season. There's a very high probability of that. Now, I could certainly dive deep into that sort of breakdown further, and maybe that's something that we'll talk about on a show next week to sort of talk a little bit more about that and the importance of having quality depth. But let's circle back and talk about, wrap up the offensive line breakdown. I thought Harlow did a decent job. He saw a lot of Taven Bryan in the second half. It was very clear that Taven Bryan was the much more talented of the two guys. But I thought, in his one-on-ones against a clearly more talented player, I thought Harlow did a decent job holding his own. He was working with the second team at the right guard position, again, as Schweitzer was continuing to work at center and Jamil Douglas was working at left guard this week. Right now, and we'll see if, my opinion changes upon rewatching the game. But I think, in addition to the 5 starters, I think it's going to be Schweitzer, Garland, Gano, Sambrello, and Harlow making this team. And the Falcons are going to keep 10 offensive linemen on the roster to start the season. Whether they maintain that over the course of the season, again, due to injuries elsewhere on the roster, we'll have to see if that, it's more than likely that the 10th offensive lineman is going to be the first guy to go in the event of injuries elsewhere where the Falcons have to reshuffle their roster. But, I think right now, if one of those guys doesn't make it, it's either going to be Gano or Harlow. And I think a lot of that's going to depend on whether or not the Falcons are sort of forced to create a roster spot, whether that's in the next week or, over the course of the season, to sort of supplement other spots on the roster due to injuries. So hopefully the Falcons, continue to be fortunate when avoiding the injury bug this preseason, as they wrap things up, and they can sort of afford to carry 10 offensive linemen on the roster. So we'll see how that changes. I'm going to wrap up the defense, but I do want to plug, if you guys want to stay plugged in on what's going to happen when the games actually start mattering, you guys should check out Locked On Eagles with host Lou DiBiase, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So defensively, it saw some flashes from the Falcons' defensive line in their pass rush early in the game. Crawford and Jarrett both got sacks. Saw Tack get a hurry on, I think, the Jarrett sack. And then really sort of created the pressure that allowed Jarrett to get that sack. I thought Vic was only okay in this game. You know, was okay. He wasn't bad or anything. And he'll definitely be a guy I'll pay attention to a little bit more upon rewatch and really focusing in on whether how much pressure and how effective the Falcons' defensive line was. We saw some struggles against the run early in the game. The Jaguars were able to gash them. I don't know how much of that was due to poor defensive line play, how much of that was linebackers out of position, and how much of that was on missed tackles. I can certainly say that missed tackles were a factor on some of those runs, other things may have been in addition to that, and it did seem like maybe it was a little bit more of linebackers being out of their gaps and being unable to get off blocks. So that'll be something I'll definitely focus on upon rewatch. With the backups, Justin Zimmer had a nice sack. I think he's been consistently the most productive of their pass rushers, among the backups on the interior. Deidre Sinnott, when I focused on him for a couple of plays, was a little underwhelmed with his pass rush, looked a little stiff and whatnot. But other than that, didn't necessarily notice anything else about that. Moving on to the linebacker, again, as I said, it did seem like the linebacker play was a little questionable at times, a little up and down performances, certainly for Duke Riley. I thought Campbell had a couple of up and downs as well, most of his downs seemed to come against the run, but he had a nice pass breakup that sort of overshadowed that. He broke up a pass at the goal line. That was a good play. Olakun had one really good tackle against Fournette. Other than that, I didn't necessarily notice anything that really stood out, and maybe some of the poor run defense was owed to sort of his greenness as well. So again, that's something I'll focus in on the rewatch. Going to the backups, I thought Jonathan Celestin, again, looked solid, looked like he was the best of the bunch. I think the only real knock right now on Celestin is whether or not he has the sort of speed and range that the Falcons typically prefer at the linebacker position. And I do wonder, because of that, whether or not they're going to necessarily see him as a roster guy or practice squad guy, with the idea of let's put him on the practice squad. Let's see if we can sort of get him to lose some weight over the next year. We saw that kind of happen with Leroy Reynolds last year, although he was on the roster, of course, but came into training camp back in 2017, noticeably lighter and much more, explosive, due to that fact. And I do wonder if maybe we'll see Celestin get the same treatment in the Falcons going another direction, maybe looking at the waiver wire for someone that more fits that athletic ideal that they look for at the linebacker for that sixth spot, or do they maybe still only go with five, which will then allow them to have that quote-unquote luxury of keeping 10 offensive linemen because they still have a roster spot available to address elsewhere on the team. Who knows at this point? That's a decision that's above my pay grade, obviously. At the cornerback position, we didn't see Desmond Trufant tonight. Isaiah Oliver got the start at left cornerback. I think he was better than he was last week, but still there were some ups and downs with him. He got beat badly on a slant for a big gain. I thought Bleedy Ray Wilson had a really solid game, had a nice interception, has been quietly solid for this entire preseason, particularly, again, relative to the other backup corners. We've seen Justin Bethel struggle. We've seen Isaiah Oliver struggle. I thought on the interception, Bleedy Ray did a nice job showing, good awareness. Chris Lammons was lined up in the slot and was out of position and got beat on the out route, but Wilson did a good job squatting on that play and sort of picking it off near the goal line to prevent a Jaguar score. I would sit here today and say, based off of their performance in the preseason, given that Oliver hasn't necessarily inspired us with a ton of confidence, that in the event of a injury to one of the start outside corners in Trufant and or really any of the three corners, if we're being honest, because Wilson does have experience playing in the slot. But if there's an injury to any of the team's top three corners, whether it's Trufant, Alford, or Poole, then I think it would be more likely at this point that maybe Bleedy Ray Wilson would be the guy that's going to necessarily step in and fill that role until the Falcons have a little bit more confidence in Oliver being able to hold his own. maybe they do after this week. Maybe they'll let that slant play slide, and maybe there's other things. And again, this is something I'll pay attention to upon rewatch that he did that sort of stand out in their way, in their eyes. But, you know, Wilson is that sort of steady veteran, so it wouldn't be totally shocked to me to see him get those reps as technically the fourth corner as opposed to Oliver. At the safety position, Keanu Neal had a nice interception on the pass that was tipped by Alford. That was, again, another sort of heads-up play by Alford where he sort of, you know, jumped a route after, you know, leaving his man on a crossing route. Neal actually fell on the play, and that's why the quarterback threw it to Austin Seferi, Jason Blake Bortles in this case. And he was wide open, and then, you know, because Alford tipped the ball up and basically bailed Neal out of the play, Neal basically was getting up to his feet, and all of a sudden the ball just landed in his hand, had a nice interception there. Ricardo Allen did not play, as we knew going into the game, so Demonte Casey got the start. Casey definitely had a really strong game, made, you know, outside of one play, I think really had an outstanding game, but I'm not as sort of quick to celebrate his performance as others may be, because the one play that he had I thought was skeptical. He got flagged on it for, you know, lowering the helmet, and certainly upon replay, it definitely looked like a clean hit where he hit with his shoulder, but unfortunately, he hit Marquise Lee in the knees with his shoulder, and Lee had to be carted off on the field. Did not look promising to suggest that Lee may play football this season. And for me, at least, not to sit here and be like it was a dirty hit or anything like that, but it felt like a hit that was unnecessary. It didn't feel like Casey had to go as low as he did on that play. And it's, you know, difficult to see, particularly in the case of the Jaguars, the guy who's the prohibitive favorite to be their number one receiver and their go-to option on the outside, basically potentially be out for the season. And I know there's going to be a lot of people who will be like, well, that's the league rules, and the league has sort of made it so that safeties have to go low on these hits. And I'm like, yeah, you may be right, but it doesn't necessarily still doesn't excuse it to me in my eyes. And I think, you know, the other thing that sort of rubbed me the wrong way was how much complaining about the flag on the play by Falcons Twitter there was, as opposed to, you know, genuine concern about the guy that got injured. And again, you know, just to me, it was like, you know, people were like, well, you can be upset at both things, but clearly you're not upset at one of those things. You're just like, oh, that's sad, you know, and moving on. Let me complain about this penalty or whatnot. You know, I just imagine, like, if that had been Mohamed Sanu that had gotten hit like that, how many people would be complaining about the flag as opposed to the hit? So that sort of bothered me a little bit. So, you know, again, Casey had an outstanding performance outside of that one play. And again, that one play was not a bad play. It wasn't a negative play. It was an unfortunate play, but it's unfortunate that, you know, that it happened. And it's just one of those things where it's the one play that stands out in my mind. I'm sure other people think the two almost interceptions he had and the several other times where he was very active in showing off his range, not only in coverage and in run support, were the things that stood out in their eyes. And again, to each their own, I'm not necessarily saying people are wrong for that, but it wasn't the case for me. You know, Casey played well enough to you still have people being like, is he out? Should he be challenging Ricardo Allen for the starting job? And I'm like, ugh, just rolling my eyes on that one. You know, moving on, we saw Ron Parker get the majority of the second half work at free safety. And what was interesting was the Falcons had Ryan Neal, who played cornerback last week, now was playing strong safety for the Falcons alongside Parker. I thought he did some decent things, you know, still looked a little raw, looked a little green at that spot in terms of his awareness and some of the angles he may or may not have taken. But relative to sort of the shoddy play we've seen at the safety position so far this preseason, I think on a relative sense, he showed some promise there. And it sort of is telling at this point where I think the Falcons are sort of desperate for any viable option to be that sort of fifth safety to land on the practice squad. And I think right now, based off of this performance, I think Neal is probably the front runner for that job just because, you know, nobody else has really stood out, you know, beyond him. Wrapping things up with the special teams, once again, David Marvin got the short end of the stick. Matt Bryant did play, made both of his field goals in the first half. Glad to see Matt Bryant still, you know, in midseason form. David Marvin did get the kickoff to start the second half, but basically, you know, Falcons never got really any other opportunities to kick a field goal other than, you know, going for it on a fourth and goal with under 2 minutes to go, you know, and they did not convert on that instance. And that basically prevented David Marvin from getting a field goal attempt. Don't fault the Falcons for going for it in that situation, but it is one of those things that once the Falcons sort of settled for field goals early in the game, it was like, yeah, they're, you know, given that the fact that the backups have yet to score so far this preseason, and that didn't change tonight, that you knew David Marvin was going to get very few opportunities. So basically the only chances he'll have to kick field goals is when Matt Ryan's in the game, and with Matt Bryant taking those opportunities in the first half, and it was kind of destined that David Marvin is not going to get those opportunities. And, you know, maybe there's a conspiracy theory that the Falcons are purposefully limiting David Marvin's opportunities to kick because they secretly know how good he is from practices and training camp and whatnot, and they want to prevent another team from scooping him up. You know, whether that's a brilliant strategy, given the expectation that Bryant is going to play another two, if not three more years in Atlanta, and whether you can sort of keep the secret on David Marvin for that period of time, you know, that's certainly debatable. But, you know, I'm just rooting for David Marvin to get some opportunity to get, you know, a chance to showcase his skills for other NFL teams. We knew that he wasn't going to get an opportunity in Atlanta. But, you know, just, hey, man, just hang in there, David Marvin. You always got next week. But again, if the backups do play, chances aren't necessarily probable that he'll get too many opportunities to kick in those games. So turning our attention to the return game, we saw Ito Smith and Reggie Davis have, you know, each have a solid return in the game. Isaiah Oliver was the only guy that really got an opportunity to return a punt. He muffed one of those. That is not a promising sign. I don't necessarily feel like the needle has really moved in any direction, good or bad, for any of these guys. Based off of this performance, I mean, it was nice for Ito Smith to bounce back after a rough game, muffing some kicks. But even with Oliver's muff, I don't necessarily know if I would necessarily declare that he's no longer in consideration. I think it's very clear that he's been given more opportunities to return punts than anybody else. So, you know, there is an indication there that the Falcons want him to win the job. And so, you know, so we'll see sort of what it is. And I think it's telling that the Falcons still have basically six guys competing for this job, and they have been doing so for, what, 2+ months, going back to OTAs and mini camps and whatnot, and you still don't have one clear-cut guy that has emerged as the front runner in this group. And that's sort of telling to sort of, and it sort of means to me that there's probably a good chance, unless someone comes out and really does show something against the Dolphins, that this is going to be an audition that may carry over into the regular season, so that the guy that is returning kicks and punts in week one may not necessarily be the guy that's returning kicks and punts in week four or week 14 or whenever. And similar to the sort of the thing that I always say about the defensive line rotation, that whatever it is at the beginning of the year, you can almost always expect it to change by the end of the year under Dan Quinn, because he'll figure out, you know, what's the best combination of guys and use that as, you know, they figure things out as the year progresses. We might see a similar situation with the return specialist. So we'll see how that works out. You know, basically having musical chairs at that position. Again, if no one necessarily comes out and necessarily takes the job next week, we'll see if that is the case. But in the meantime, we'll figure it out. And hopefully I'm trying to get a guest to come on with me tomorrow on Monday to recap the show and get thoughts on the Falcons in this performance, as well as throughout the preseason, beyond my own opinions. You guys have heard me now for 3 weeks now, and I'm sure that you're tired and you're sick of it. So we'll try to get somebody else on to also discuss the Falcons. And in the meantime, I'm sure, you know, you guys will tell me why, whatever, I don't know. But you guys can get at me on Twitter. I'm at FalcFans. If it's podcast related, just let me know in the tweet. If it is podcast related, send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. If you prefer Facebook, we got the page that's Locked On Falcons there. You can also send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. And you can also leave a comment at LockedOnFalcons.com or FalcFans.com, where the show is posted daily. All right, guys. Until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.